This episode of the Mickey Mouse Podcast is brought to you by MEI Travel and Mouse Fan Travel. And during the holiday season, you think about giving gifts. Well, why not give yourself a gift? How about a Disney vacation? And who do you go see for that? Well, Santa's helpers at MEI Travel and Mouse Fan Travel. They'll do their best to get you the best for your vacation dollar. So give them a try. Go visit them at MEI-travel.com, MouseFanTravel.com, or you can click on their banner at MickeyMilesPodcast.com.
This is Clive Blunt from Jacksonville Beach, Florida, and I listen to the Mickey Miles Podcast.
This is the Mickey Miles Podcast. From 5K fun runs to full marathons, this is the podcast that helps you learn everything you need to know about running Disney races. The Mickey Miles Podcast is not affiliated with, authorized, or endorsed by, or in any way officially connected with Run Disney, the Walt Disney Company, Disney Enterprises, Inc., or any of their affiliates. Now, here are your hosts for the Mickey Miles Podcast, Michelle Scribner-McLean and Mike Scopa.
Welcome to episode 117 of the Mickey Miles Podcast. My name is Mike Scopa from WDW Today. My co-host is here. Her name, Michelle Scribner-McLean. Welcome to the show, Michelle. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Michael. That was a really very warm welcome to today's show. That was very nice of you.
I like to make all my guests feel comfortable, okay. Co-hosts included.
Okay. Well, I have a shout-out today, and it is to Justin Gujan. I hope I said your name correctly, Justin, who is from, well, right near where you grew up, Mike, Everett, Mass.
And oh, wow.
He's a new listener to the show, and he's training for the Dopey. So I think that is a perfect shout-out for today's topic, which I think I'm just going to sit back and listen because we have some veterans with us here today.
That's true. And let's start. Let's introduce the veterans. First, ladies first. She's been on the show before. She hails from Northern Illinois. Her name is Holly Allen. Welcome to the show, Holly.
Thanks, Mike. Thanks, Michelle.
Hey, Holly, I missed you at Tower of Terror this year.
Yeah, I missed being there. Mm. It looked a little bit cooler this year.
It was cooler, but it was not as much fun without you there.
Oh, thanks.
That's true. Our other veteran is hails from Alexandria, Virginia. His name is, not to be confused with Mike, Michael Miller. Michael, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Mike. Thanks, Michelle.
So,
Mike, I missed you. Michael, I missed you at Tower.
Yeah,
Tower
we missed
too.
You too. Missed both you guys.
That's okay. I understood that was implied.
And so it begins.
So we're talking about something very, very serious, which almost looking at something a little bit more seriously than we have in the past. And we've asked Holly and Michael to come to this episode because they are veterans of the Goofy Challenge at the Run Disney, Walt Disney World Marathon Weekend. And they are two people who we thought of who could help us discuss something very, very important, and that is what this Dopey Challenge is all about. We've talked about it, we've kidded about it, but there are a lot of serious components that come into play here. And we wanted to make sure that all our listeners who are planning to do this, be it veterans of the Goofy Challenge or people who are just trying something very, very challenging their first time, realize everything that goes into planning for this weekend. So we're going to start off. We don't know if we're going to get through everything on this show. This may be one of two parts, but we want to make sure that we bring this to everyone's attention. So I'm going to start off with asking Mike and Michael and Holly about the actual physical training. And you both of you have done – I want to start off with Holly first. Holly, you've done a lot of marathons, and you've done the Goofy. And when you approach something like the Dopey, can you tell me what you have in the back of your mind regarding when you know you're undertrained for what's coming up or whether you're overtraining for it? Can you start and talk about that?
Sure, Mike. Excuse me. I think the first thing, the easiest way for me to tell when I'm overtraining is I have a lot of trouble sleeping at night. If I'm putting in too many miles, I can't get a good night's sleep no matter what, even though when I go to bed, I feel really exhausted, but I kind of toss and turn all night. Also, I'm not my usual happy self either. I'm kind of cranky during the day. So that's a signal for me that I'm overtraining. I've had it happen a couple times, and I had read some statistics about that, and that is one of the big signs. Undertraining, it's pretty easy for me to tell if I'm going out for my normal runs and I'm just not feeling my normal pace. I've gone through that this summer. I just could tell that I wasn't putting in the miles. And the last marathon I did in June, I just did not feel well the entire time. And it was because I didn't put the work in to get it done. Now that we're into the fall, I feel like my mileage is back to where it is. And the last marathon I did in October, I felt much better. So I think that's listen to your body is the number one rule. If something feels off, definitely take a listen.
Michael?
Yeah, I guess I would characterize myself as being in a perpetual state of undertrained. So it's easier for me to recognize that. I don't consider myself somebody who trains for a lot of the races I do. I just do a lot of high mileage, so I may on average anywhere from 30 to 40 miles a week, just normally. And I do that just so that I have the ability to be able to ramp it up for a race or periods of time. And I think for myself, especially when I go into the dopey, or we go into those things where you're doing something like a multi-day event, I do focus more on, I'll call it the back-to-backs or the long runs, those types of things, to make sure that my stamina and my legs are there. But I really haven't had a problem with the overtraining aspect, because I don't basically follow a rigid program or regime when I'm going into it. I just sort of go by how my body feels.
So this is really interesting to me, because I mean, so 30 or 40 miles, you're definitely training enough, in my opinion. And when this airs, which will be a few weeks from now, I have just finished my first 4 day in a row training. Getting up in the morning, that was actually okay, but I just had probably one of the worst runs I've ever had, ever, an 18-mile run. And for lots and lots of different reasons, and everybody has them, everything could have been going well, but it just really hit home for me that this is I'd never done the goofy before and I'm doing the dopey. Do either of you have any worries about people who might be undertraining? What might they be facing when they get there if they don't put in the time? Because for me, it really showed me that I really need to do this and take this very seriously. Holly?
I think if you are undertrained, I think you really, unfortunately, are not going to have the fun experience that you signed up for. If you're going to be for 4 days in a row trying to gut it out, by that fourth day, when you toe the line on the marathon and you haven't put those long miles in, it's going to be a really long day. I hate to tell people that, but the most important thing to be doing now is those back-to-backs, at least two, four in a row, that's pretty hardcore. Hopefully one of them is a walk. I don't know if I'd be running 4 days in a row right now, if you're not used to that. But those at least two back-to-backs is really going to be critical to have enough fun and successful dopey.
What do you think, Michael?
Oh, I agree. My first goofy was in 2008, and I actually hurt my Achilles tendon on Thanksgiving. So between Thanksgiving and doing the goofy, I literally ran 8 miles total. I did a lot of elliptical work and a lot of physical therapy. And as I told the physical therapist, my sole goal was, even if I had to walk and crawl, was just to complete the race. It was probably one of the most painful experiences I'd ever done. Now, using that, I've recognized and I've adjusted for the next two times, and I realized, anybody could put themselves in that position, but I had run marathons before and I'd had a familiarity, so I didn't have that mental hurdle of just the distance. It was more about being able to finish. And I think it really depends. If you haven't run long distances before, it is crucial that you get your stamina up. It is crucial you get a feel for running on tired legs so that you understand it. Because you don't have the luxury of knowing, I've done this before, I've done a marathon, or I've done something like that, and know what it feels like and how to go through it. So I do think that is key, that you do have a good plan and a good regime for the first time that you're doing it, to understand what it will take to get through it.
Something else I'm figuring out too, and I am working with Jeff Galloway, and it was frustrating at the beginning, but now I really understand it, is the importance of keeping your pace a lot lower than what you've done. Would you guys agree?
Yes, definitely. Yeah. I think if you're doing all four runs at full out hard pace, that's not only physically exhausting but mentally exhausting to try and maintain that pace.
Yeah, no, I agree, and I think one of the things that most people fail to recognize is you cannot run all your training runs at the pace that you want to run the race at. That will just destroy your body. Most people feel that unless I run really fast and really hard in training, I'm not going to be able to do it. But it's counterintuitive as it may seem, that's just not the case. Running a good, consistent, steady pace, understanding what it is, you'd be surprised about how the adrenaline, and obviously running at the happiest place on earth, will help, you know, put a little more balance in your step and give you a little more, you know, speed in what you're doing. But do not wear yourself down in your training.
And you know, when you think about that, Mike, when you talk about what's going to happen in January, you've got 4 days in a row in which you're asking your body to step up to the line and cover some miles. And when we think about back-to-back races, we need to think about back-to-back recovery periods. And so I wanted to pick your brains. I'm going to start with you, Michael. Can you talk a little bit about how you take care of yourself in between races? What kind of recovery methods do you work into your schedule? And I'm talking not just physical stuff. I mean, I'm talking about nutrition-wise, and I'm talking about mentally. I'm talking about physical. What steps do you take so that you prepare yourself in the best possible way for the very next race?
Yeah, I mean, and again, I'll go back to 2008, which was, I think, a case study on what not to do. Looking at Disney itself and specifically, you know, doing the Goofy there, my instinct was after I did the half marathon was I'm going to go nap. I'm going to, you know, maybe go to the pool, but I'm going to do very little. I'm going to get a massage, and I'm going to just, you know, try to baby myself, if you will. And what I found when I woke up, like I woke up to go to the bathroom at 2 a.m, you know, before the wake-up call, and literally I thought to myself, oh, my God, if I got to go do the marathon now, I will cry. I mean, I'm 40 at the time, and I'm thinking, I will cry if I have to get out of bed and run the race. That's how sore I was. And what I found out of my next Goofy, doing the next Goofy, was you need to be active. You need to have what I call active recovery between these types of events. Get out and walk the parks. I'm not talking like normal, but get out there and walk. Keep your muscles loose and keep them limber, because what most people don't realize is the pain comes from tightening up and not doing activity. So if you can keep yourself a little bit loose, you know, walk the parks, go out, you know, go out to have a dinner, and you know, if you need to, obviously, you know, watch what you're eating and stuff like that. But go out and be physically active, and you will stay looser and feel better the next day than if you do nothing.
Mike, when you talk about going out into the parks, what type of because this is something that I've thought about too. You can do too much and you can do too little. What type of time frame or how long should someone be in the parks?
Well, and again, it depends on how you are too when you're at the parks. And again, if you've gone there before and you know, so but assuming you don't know, it's not the time to explore all of Disney World or all of Epcot and keep walking around there. But there's nothing wrong with going in and like strolling around World Showcase slowly, you know, stopping, you know, watching, you know, a show or doing stuff like that. But again, it's not about putting in a lot of mileage in the park. It's about relaxing and I call it as like a stroll. You know, like think of the 50s type of idea where you'd just walk around the neighborhood. You'd meet people, stuff like that, that kind of thing, you know, and ride a ride or two. Obviously, the roller coasters will jar you and make you a little sore, I found. But if you go through, like I said, like an Epcot, and you slowly walk, because again, this how it's spread out, if you walk through a park like that, it will keep you limber, and there's a lot to see and a lot to do.
I agree. And one thing that I found this week with doing my four runs in a row is because I have been doing the training, you know, getting up in the morning and then running and then doing my regular day. After I did my 18 miles, my legs weren't sore at all, which I attribute that to just the ongoing training and moving around after I did my runs every day. Holly, what are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, I think first off, even before we get to the recovery, just the training itself, learning how to recover. Step back weeks are really important when you're doing the training.
Yep.
I know some people might be panicking now, thinking they don't have enough time, and they might try and build up like this week I'm going to do 15, next week 16, next week 17, next week 18 to try and get caught up. That's really a recipe for disaster. You should always have at least after 1 or even 2 weeks a step back week, meaning if you're going to do 14 this week, the next week you might want to step back to 12. That gives your legs a chance to freshen up, and then you can go for that next hurdle, that next longer run. So definitely, if you're starting to feel panic, take a look at how many weeks you have left, and there's still time. We still have, I think, well, by the time this show comes out, maybe we're at 10 weeks, but I think we're at 12 weeks now. There's still time to get up to those longer runs, but definitely put in those step back weeks.
That's interesting that you say that, because when I got my training plan from Jeff Galloway, I was really surprised that there wasn't a progressive longer run every week. It was every other week. So
yep. Yeah, very important. And I would definitely agree with Michael on the keep moving aspect. That'll also go with the being able to sleep at night. That's the most critical point, is being able to go to sleep early each night. Definitely after each race, don't go back and take a nap. I know you're going to be exhausted. You got up at 2 a.m, the first thing you want to do, but you really want to keep going so you're able to get to bed at like 8:00, 8:30, 9:00 that night before the race. And trust me, if you do not take a nap, it will be easy to go to bed at 8:30 every night and be able to be rested and have a good 5 hours of sleep before you have to get up and do it again.
This is good stuff.
And I'm not ashamed to say, like, you know, some people will take aspirin or stuff during the day. I usually, like, I will take a Tylenol PM or something at 8:00, because there's a little bit of an edge, you know, to running races where you're nervous and stuff, I guess. And otherwise, I may toss and turn more. And usually, if I'm, like Holly said, a little tired stuff and taking something like that, I get a good night's sleep before the next day.
That doesn't make you groggy the next day?
No, actually, if I would take a Tylenol PM at home tonight, I would be destroyed tomorrow till like 10. But for some reason, when it's between races, and I'm just talking one, I don't take two. But if I take one or whatever, it does not have the same effect.
There is so much that goes into planning this type of a athletic event, because of the not just the miles, but there are so many components that come into it. And one of the things I wanted to ask you guys is, have you figured out, and I'm sure you have, when you're coming in, you know, it doesn't matter where you're going to stay, what you're packing, are you doing anything differently than you've done in the past when you've done Goofy? And one of the things I wanted to ask, and I wanted to point this out, because this almost happened to me one time for what was called MouseFest. Have you thought about coming into Orlando or flying to Orlando a day earlier than normal, just in case there is a snowstorm? Because think of it, if you could not pick up your packet and you can't run the 5K, then you don't get to do Dopey. Have you thought about that?
Me? No, but I'm not the case study. I literally don't look at most race packets or race information until about 8:00 the night before the race. So, when we get closer, depending on the weather, I may, to your point, Mike, look and see if I have to, you know, travel earlier stuff. But I don't really pay that much attention to it. I just sort of show up and run. Right. So for me.
Well, I'm the total opposite. Yes. I'm a worrier and I panic. We are coming in a day earlier this year. For the other races, we've always been last minute. We've even flown in the night before the 5K and done our packet pickup on the day of the 5K. You can do that sometimes. I don't know if they still do it, but this year we are flying in Tuesday to make sure, because we live in Chicago area where snow in January is very common, and I am panicked about it. So I would like to have that little buffer.
I haven't even made my travel arrangements yet. I mean, I booked a room, but that's it.
So are you guys, either one of you, let's start off with Holly. Holly, you doing, are you packing anything differently this year than last year? More running gear, more gels? Are you doing anything differently because you're doing Dopey as opposed to Goofy? Goofy.
Goofy. You said Dopey.
Dopey. That's the new one. That's next year.
Dopey. That's next year.
Dopey and Goofy.
Seven days, 70 miles.
I've already started thinking about that, and I have no idea how we're going to fit everything. Also, I think I need to go shopping because I don't have four. If it's going to be cold, I don't have 4 days worth of cold weather. Even though I live in Chicago, I don't run outside in the winter that much. I don't have 4 days worth of tights and everything. So, gels too. Another thing, I'm going to have to definitely check a bag because I'm not going to be able to carry on like I usually do for races. The amount of gels that I'm going to need for the 4 days. It's definitely going to take a lot more thought and have to start thinking about what to pack well before the night before.
Yeah, and I think one thing, and Holly and I have both done the unofficial Dopey, where you did the 5K before the Goofy, and it's sort of funny because this is the one thing that is in my mind where it's not just like adding another day. There's an, I'll call it an exponential component, which is it just seems a little more, okay, I've got to put a little more thought into this and structure into it because, you know, I'll give you for instance, when you run Goofy, one of the first tips I tell anybody is take two pairs of shoes. Do not run 2 days in the same shoes. Mm-hmm. Okay, now we're going to be running 4 days. And then you start sitting there thinking, okay, I could probably still do 2 days of shoes, but how do I stagger them? What do I wear? All that kind of stuff. Then to Holly's point, you go through, and I think some people would like to think, oh, I'll somehow do laundry or something in between. You're going to have no desire to try to do any laundry in between. So now all of a sudden you've got 4 days of running clothes. Now, being a guy, I'm going to sit there and say, can I squeeze the same pair of shorts for the 5K and the 10K, and is that one less? Or something like that. But I think the reality is, if you like compression wear and you wear them on all your runs, you now got 4 days you've got to account for. And there's a cost. You also have to start saying, how much can I afford to sort of buy in advance to take down with me?
Yeah, I mean, oh, to be a clothing outfitter at the expo this year. They're going to make a lot of money.
Not all of us have as many compression, you know, stuff as Helen Dunn does.
So it could be, I mean, it could be raining. It could be snowing. It could be really hot.
and so, We've done them both.
Yeah, right? Yeah. I've done the half in both of those when it was kind of snowy and icy. It's amazing. Yep. I'd love to try to figure out how many gels we're going to have to pack. That is just, it's staggering. And I'll just probably never want to see a gel again. So let's talk about families, you know, bringing your family. I know, Michael, you haven't made any travel plans yet, but there's things that you need to consider. Like if you're going to have to get up 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock in the morning for 4 days in a row, do you want a quiet room? Do you want an additional room? You know, what's the schedule going to be? Should the family even come with you? What do you think, Holly?
I think it's tough. I'm lucky in the fact that my husband, Dave, he gets up and either runs now with me. He's doing 3 of the 4 mornings, and the fourth he'll be out there spectating his little heart out. For us, we don't need the 2 rooms, but if you have a family with small children, I think the 2 rooms is a great idea. I think if you definitely have to have the conversation before you go down there that this trip, the focus for you, the runner, is on the races and not on touring. So if your significant other is like, come on, we need to take the kids on Dumbo again, and you're thinking to yourself, I really should be back in the room and getting ready to get up in the morning. I think if you go in with that up front, I think it's fine to bring the family. But if your significant other has no idea what they're in for, then it's recipe for disaster.
Mm-hmm. Michael, what do you think?
Well, as somebody who now has a 12 and a 9-year-old, so when I did the first ones, they were 8 and whatever the math is. But anyway, I'll tell you this. When we've gone, the first 2 times we went, it was more of a family thing. My parents went not to come see me race, but also my brother and sister-in-law because they love Disney. To date, I don't think a single person in my family has come actually see me run any race at Disney, even if they're there. As my wife likes to say, you can go run your little races, dear. We're going to Disney. To me, it really, we try to usually get a 2-bedroom, you know, we're DVC members. That way my wife and I, at least she's maybe inconvenienced when I get up to go into the bathroom, and the bathrooms are usually large to get ready and stuff like that. But usually when I leave, no one else is up and even aware that I've left. And in fact is, I've done races in Disneyland, in Disney World, and there's been times I've literally got back to the room and they've all still been in bed.
But I think it's a good point that if you know that you need to really have this discussion with your family ahead of time, and maybe have the vacation after these races. You
know, my wife is not coming this time, and she didn't come the last one I did when I went there. And because in our Fairfax County schools, the kids have a 4-day weekend at the end of January, and as she said, I'd much rather all of us go in January at the end of it together when you're not doing the races than pick the kids out of school to not see you while you're running and that kind of thing.
Makes sense.
There's a lot of things to really think about. And one of the things is, and Michelle, this comes to mind because when you did your Reach the Beach, you said that the most difficult thing was not the running, but it was the refueling. Mm-hmm. And we talk about that. We've talked to Tara Guidus, who's been on the show. She is the Run Disney nutritionist advisor. And everyone seems to understand and agree that there is no way to replenish all that you lose in between after you've done a race, after you've done a run. So my question started off with Holly. Have you thought about how you're going to eat while you're down there doing these four races? Have you thought about things like how you'll refuel? Are you planning to take any extra steps? Have you already decided how you're going to eat, where you're going to eat your ADRs and all that kind of stuff? Basically, how you're going to keep your body energized and fueled up during this 4 days?
Yeah, I have started thinking about it, 'cause that's really critical for these 4 days. I think the number one thing that I always do, and it's a super easy thing, is the chocolate milk. I always put it either in my gear bag if I'm checking a bag, or I have it in the car. It's a shelf-stable one. It's one of those Horizon ones that you can see at Starbucks. They don't need to be refrigerated. So the nice thing is I can pack them in my suitcase and bring them down with me, and you don't have to worry about them spoiling thing. And I have that immediately. As soon as I get through the finisher shoot, that's the first thing I have, and I found that that works wonders. And then after that, it's back to the hotel for the number one thing is that ice bath. Get in that ice bath. Probably won't do it for the 5K and the 10K, but definitely after the half. And then I want something a little bit more substantial, like a sandwich. Again, something with a little bit more to it. And ADR, definitely already have my ADRs for dinner, because the last thing I want to do is try and wait around for a dinner and walk around trying to find a place to eat.
Are there favorite places that you go for pre-race meals?
Yeah, Mama Melrose is always one of them. We have an ADR for there. Il Molino in the Swan or the Dolphin, I forget which one it's in. But that one's usually not as crowded and usually easier to get in and out. And I think that's it for this. There must be another one somewhere, but I think those are the two. Those are the ones before the half and the full.
I was on mute. So, Michael, I was thinking you've got a different situation when you're going down with your family. And as a runner who's going to be doing four races in 4 days, your schedule for eating may be different from your family. But do you try to blend the two somehow?
Well, you know, so again, I'm not necessarily a typical case study as to nutrition either. So when I do the half and the full, I've signed up for the race retreat, which, you know, some people can or, you know, can't do it. And in the race retreat, they have what is the glorified Disney buffet, you know, the reconstituted eggs, all that stuff, and the sausage links. After each race, I gotta admit that if you see me, you would think I was a refugee from a war zone, because I basically attack the buffet and eat like I will not be eating for 2 days. I will have, you know, numerous sausage links. I will have eggs. I will have the full smorgasbord. And that will probably be the biggest meal I will eat again until after the next race. Now, during the rest of the day, I will snack and I will go and just sort of nosh, if you will, if I'm hungry. But it's not, I'll say, a grand design or plan. It will go by craving. And usually, because my wife is the planner in the family, if we have, you know, ADRs and we're going stuff there, you know, she's like, is there any limits? And we're like, no, wherever you want to go, we'll go, and I'll find something either light or whatever to eat. But that's sort of how I do it.
Any things that you avoid, either one of you, absolutely will not have before a race?
Any fried food, for sure. Try not to have a lot of big salads. You know, typical triggers that you wouldn't want to run with the next day. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, I'm a picky eater to begin with, so I'm usually very good at whatever I can eat. I don't eat a lot of, I'll say, you know, I don't even eat any condiments, pretty much, you know, ketchup, mustard, and stuff like that. So I eat very, you know, simply, and so I have not had a lot of problems with a lot of the stuff that I tend to eat.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so what about the night before these big races, 5K, 10K, half and full? What time are you going to be going to bed to get up for those early race mornings? Holly?
For the 5K, I typically actually stay up a little bit later. I might stay up till, you know, 10, even 11. I like that because it gets me kind of tired for the rest of the week, so I can go to bed earlier on the night before the 10K, the half, and the full. I'm usually too excited to sleep anyway, so I figure I might as well just stay up and have some fun, and then, because I'm just going to lay in bed anyway. So I might as well stay up, maybe watch Illuminations. That'll be the one night that we do stay up late. And then the next night, we get up really early for the 5K. I'm tired. And then stay up again all day, like I said, no nap. And then it's easy for me to go to bed. And then the rest of the week, I'm trying to be in bed 8:30, maybe not asleep, but at least laying down, starting to get tired, and usually asleep for sure by 9.
Mike, what about you?
Okay, oh. Yeah, I was just going to ask Mike. No.
No, so anyway, yeah, no, and first of all, I do sort of subscribe a little to what Holly's saying. I don't necessarily for the 5K, at least historically, have felt like a need to try to go to bed early, you know, as the other nights. And I do try to go, you know, back to the room or be back in the room, at least knowing about 8 to 9-ish to go to bed, at least by 9 at the latest. Now, that doesn't mean, again, I fall asleep. There's usually before races, I tend not to sleep as well, as I said before. But I think if you are, you know, as Holly said, off your feet and sort of more relaxing and winding down, it's still sort of the same benefit. I do think that again, adding another day here, one of the unique things that even we're going to have to figure out is, you know, they usually say it's not the night you sleep before the marathon that's the most important night to get to sleep. It's two nights before. And because most people don't sleep well the night before a marathon, especially if it's their first one. Now that you've got 4 days in the mix, it's sort of like, how does that rule apply if you're running races each day? And so I think it's going to be a little bit of a new territory for people to try to figure this one out.
Okay, I have 6 quick questions to ask both of you before we wrap this up, and I'm gonna.
And I have another 27, so we'll be wrapping it up for the next 3 hours.
I want both of you to think about this. Considering what's going to happen that weekend, do you think it would be best for people to use Disney transportation or rent a car while at Walt Disney World?
This is the lightning round, by the way.
Yes,
I always rent a car. This last time was the first race, you know, and I've done multiple Run Disney races where I drove. I stayed really close, but I drove to the races, and I thought it was outstanding being able to do that.
I also always rent a car for that exact reason. I like to control my own destiny and not wait for a Disney bus race morning. So we stay at the boardwalk, and it's just a couple, 2 right turns, and you're in the parking lot.
Okay. Michael earlier mentioned about roller coasters. If Holly, I'll start off with you on this one. What attractions do you avoid when you're doing something like back-to-back-to-back-to-back races?
The only thing I avoid as far as attractions is anything with a long line, because standing on my feet is like the worst thing for me, and it really kills your legs and everything. So if something has a long line, I definitely avoid it. But other than that, I no issues other than maybe after the full when you're a little sore, I wouldn't recommend Space Mountain because that's a killer.
Yeah, I haven't really not walked anything. I usually walk everything, or will if I'm in the park and there's a ride and it's available, I will ride it. But I would agree that I know when we were in Disneyland, riding the Matterhorn after the half was a little bit like a Space Mountain ride, where it was a little herky jerky and it was tough on the legs.
Wearing the same shoes that you wear for races around the parks.
I usually wear open-toed sandals. Like, my whole philosophy is I don't want – not any like Tevas or something like that that has straps on it. I just don't like to put my feet back into shoes for, you know, the next 12 hours.
I hear that. Holly?
I have foot issues, so I have to still wear a sneaker. It's not the sneakers I ran in, but it'll be a running shoe.
Side comment. Holly made mention about long lines. Fast Pass Plus may be very much responsible for us seeing very long lines in the next 3 months. So just keep that in mind when it comes to January. Okay, what about fireworks? Holly, I think you said you do watch Illuminations the night before 5K?
5K, yeah. That would be the only night that I would watch. I think we're going to be doing Wishes that night. But that will be the only night that I'll see fireworks for the whole weekend.
Michael?
I'm not... And I know this isn't going to be popular. I'm not a big fan of Illumination, so missing it isn't a big deal for me.
What?
I know. I knew that was going to be
there. Edit.
So, to that end, I'm not planning to see anything. Again, since I'm sort of flying solo, I'm more, you know, not scheduling activities or whatever. But I do think if I were to see something, it would be more just because I was in the park, not because of planning to see it.
Okay, just making note, delete Michael Miller from Illuminations Party. Okay, the next thing I wanted to ask was, what about fluid during the day, those 4 days? Always drinking all day long? How do you handle that? Holly?
Yeah, I think it's really important to always have a water bottle with you. You never want to be thirsty. you don't have to go to extreme and be drinking when you're not thirsty, but I always have one, so I am thirsty. If I am thirsty, I can have a sip. And also at lunch or dinner, if it's at a table service restaurant, always have a big glass of water and try and drink as much as possible.
Holly, what about spirits?
That's what I was going to ask.
Yes, I've been known to have a beer or two before a race, but just that, especially for the dopey, you don't want to be going crazy. That's for after on the World Showcase.
So it's not like in your water bottles?
No.
Okay.
Although I may have filled a water bottle for the World Showcase once.
I just want to say I have seen Holly drink beer during a race. That's putting it out there.
That's another show.
Yes, that's another show. Yeah. No, for me, actually, I like to stay hydrated too, but I actually go against conventional wisdom. My drink of choice is usually Diet Coke, so I drink a lot of Diet Cokes during the day, and that's where the caffeine is supposed to be dehydrating, but again, it still seems to work for me.
Do you guys have, keeping in mind what you're going to be doing, do you have like a checklist or a routine that you are looking to do every night before every race this January? Okay, I got to plug in my watch, I have to fill my water bottles and things like that. Do you guys have checklists or routines you're going to go through?
Yeah, definitely. I like to have everything laid out the night before, the bib, the medical information filled in on the back, all my bottles ready, gels laid out, just to make sure that it's not a scramble at 2:30 in the morning. I want to make sure that my Garmin is working and charged. You have to start line and turn on your Garmin and find that it's not charged. So definitely every night have everything laid out. It'll make it easier to go to sleep because you're not wondering if you have everything.
Yeah. No, I agree with that. I think everyone, the big thing is, there's probably a power surge for the 2 hours when everyone's going to bed the night before the race. As everyone, their iPhones and their Garmins and everything. But I agree with Holly. I like to at least, again, it's not a formal checklist, but I like to have everything laid out and know that I have anything available for the next day. That way, if you have to make any adjustments or whatever, you have some time to do it. Because nothing feels worse than scrambling the morning of a race that, oh my God, I don't have X or I need Y.
Okay, well, I have one more question, which is, what are some signs during the 4 days that you may need to adjust your schedule? Like, if a race doesn't go exactly as planned, or if the temperature is a little warmer than you thought, what might you do to adjust your schedule? I know it could be any number of different variables that could cause different things to happen. What do you think?
Yeah,
should I stump you?
Kind of. I think the weather, obviously, if it's was last year and it's ridiculously warm, I think you really have to just throw out any goal out the window and just try and finish upright and happy. And other than that, if you really are tired on Saturday during the afternoon, and you just feel like you can't stay up, take a nap then. That might happen to me. I haven't done the 4 days in a row. So maybe 3 days in a row is my limit with a no nap. Maybe Saturday afternoon I will be taking a nap. So I think don't be so rigid on everything. And remember, for me, I always say Disney is all about having fun and not about a time. You spend a lot of money for these races and you want to make sure you're getting your money's worth and having fun. And don't be totally focused on setting a new PR.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I do think that that a lot of people get so caught up in the fact when I did my first back in 2008 with the first Disney race, it was after having some health issues for a few years and not running. So I was really focused on, I wanted to do well and stuff. And like I said, I was injured, so it didn't go well, but I pushed myself to do as hard as I could. And I would never do that again because, my thought is, there's a certain point in the race that where you mentally are like, I'm done. I'm like, look, I'm at 3/4 of the way. I'm already starting to think, what am I going to do the rest of the day in the parks? What can I do stuff like that? You don't usually think that way in a regular marathon. You usually think, I want to get to that finish line. And I do think that having run in the extreme freezing temperatures that was, in 2010 and in the heat last year, I do think, what Holly said is wise. You have to adjust for the conditions of the day. You have to adjust and recognize that, it's about running at Disney, not just running the race and enjoying yourself and adjusting accordingly.
Mm-hmm. Great. Thank you.
We've covered a lot, and before we wrap up, I just want to give Michael and Holly the floor. If there's anything that you guys can think of that we may have overlooked regarding running gear, regarding training, regarding scheduling, refueling, mental training, is there anything that you guys would like to add before we wrap up this show?
I just like to say this, you know, trust your training. There's still plenty of time left to get those training runs in. When you get there, there's nothing you can do about it. So go out there, have fun, keep smiling, and you'll have a great time regardless.
Yeah, no, I echo that. I do think that running at Disney is unlike any other race. And I think the reason it's any other race is it's more of an event in some respects. I mean, you have, you know, cast members out cheering for you running through the castle. I mean, I'm a guy, but it makes me sort of messed up when I ran through the castle the first time. And I thought, wow, that was unique. But the second time I ran up Main Street and ran through the castle, I felt the same way. I felt like it was in the middle of the parade. And I think some people lose sight of that aspect of it. And they just, you know, they get into, it's a race and I'm so worried about the race and stuff. And I find if you enjoy it more, you will be surprised at how well you will do and how well you'll finish afterwards.
That's great. That's great. Thank you.
That is so, so right. So we want to thank Holly and Mike, Michael, for helping us discuss this. And again, we wanted to bring a lot of this, a lot of these topics to the forefront for those who are planning to do an incredible feat in January. And Michael and Holly, we want to wish you the best of luck. I have a feeling we'll have you back on the show again. So, and I think I'll be seeing one or both of you fairly soon anyway. So thank you once again for coming on the show.
Well, I'll see you at Wine and Dine.
Yes. Thank you.
Great. Yes. Thank you.
Yep. And thanks for having us.
Well, thank you for coming on. So for Holly Allen, for Michael Miller, for Michelle Scrivener-McLean, and for little old me, we'll see you on the road. This episode of the Mickey Mouse Podcast has been brought to you by MEI Travel and Mouse Fan Travel. And again, it's the holiday season. Think about maybe giving yourself a gift and planning a Disney vacation. And again, Santa's help is awaiting for you at MEI Travel and Mouse Fan Travel. They'll do the best job they can, and anyone can, to help you get the best vacation experience ever. So visit them at MEI Travel, MEI-travel.com. MouseFanTravel.com, or you can click on their banner at MickeyMilesPodcast.com.
Thanks for joining us on today's episode of the Mickey Miles Podcast. We hope you enjoyed listening. Our discussion continues on Facebook at Facebook.com/MickeyMilesPodcast, where you can give us your comments and feedback on the show. You can also follow us on Twitter at Twitter.com/MickeyMilesPod. And if you have any questions for us, you can send them to questions@MickeyMilesPodcast.com. We'll try to answer them as soon as possible. For all of us here at the Mickey Miles Podcast, this is Rick Gray saying until next time, thanks for listening, and we'll see you on the road.